grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Great, thank you. Carla and Doug, are you there?
We are here. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you so much. I'm so excited. I love you guys.
Love you.
I'm going to take it over. I'm going to hand it over to you and let you guys talk about what you know.
Oh, that'll be a short conversation.
What you know?
We're going to go for what we suspect. My name is Doug Rowell, and I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Doug. My name is Carla Rowell, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carla. I want to thank Yvonne for inviting us to do this. She's just one of my favorite people in the world, and always in service. And thank you especially for inviting us to talk on a workshop centered around love. Carla and I both had extremely promiscuous drinking careers. we're not the same people. Of course, we're older. So we should have slowed down I'm not somebody who came from an alcoholic family or started drinking too young. My dad enjoyed a beer occasionally. He once said, I enjoyed a beer, but I think drinking so much beer that it affects the way I walk, talk, and drive a car are insane, which is fascinating to me that somebody would have that kind of opinion about drinking beer, because beer is what I drink when I'm not drinking. And not now, but my mother, we never knew if she was an alcoholic because she wouldn't drink. And you clearly can't diagnose a case of alcoholism for somebody that won't swallow any alcohol. She said, when I was young, I drank with my friends when they drank. Every time I drank, I got sick, stupid, and obnoxious. So I just stopped. And I said, you got to drink through that, Mom. You know, the promised land lies beyond sick, stupid, and obnoxious. So my mother did not have the tenacity to make this program. I'm the oldest of four kids and the only boy. And as far as I know, I'm the only alcoholic in my immediate family. And I never had a drink until I was 18. So I didn't start too young. I was, you know, virtually a man. I was at an age where you could, at that time, you could be drafted into the military. You can vote, you know, I mean, so 18 is a man. So I didn't start too early. I only started drinking, but I wasn't really interested in drinking. My friend Morris said, if you want to, you know, get a home run with this girl, because we used to use these baseball terms, and there was a first base and a second base and a third base, home run was the deal. That's what you're looking for. And Morris said, if you want to get a home run with this girl, you got to get her drunk. So I went and stole a quart of Rainier Ale, which seemed to be the national beverage of Garden Grove, California, where I grew up. And this girl and I went and parked, and I pulled this bottle out from under the seat, and we passed it back and forth. And first time I ever had this feeling, this warm, happy, smart, cool feeling. I always knew I wasn't cool. I knew what cool was, and I knew I wasn't. But somehow, within about a 5-minute period that night, I was so cool that you would see me across the street and go, that guy's cool. That's what alcohol does for me. And so this is the first time I ever had an alcohol buzz, and the first time I ever had sex in front of a witness. So that's how my drinking started. I decided I'm going to do both of these things much as I can the rest of my life. And I got out of school, and I was a guitar. I was started playing guitar, and I started performing in some of the local venues. And then I got in a couple of duets and trios, And then the Beatles came to the U.S. and brought the British invasion, and it changed the face of popular music. And I got an electric guitar and started playing rock and roll music. And I got in a band. I moved to Hollywood, and we played all up and down Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard at all the popular dance venues. And so I was making a living in music. And then a show opened on Broadway called Hair. And I always liked Broadway musicals. I like Flower Drum Song and The Music Man and Oklahoma. But this was a musical about hippies. This is a musical comedy about my people. Hippies living on the street, having sex, using drugs, and singing about it. So I auditioned for them. I got the job, and all of a sudden, I'm touring the United States and Canada for 3.5 years with the lead role of Burger, the obnoxious speed freak, sex-crazed leader of the tribe. So that's where my drinking and using, I think, really took off. People would come up on the stage afterwards and say, hey, man, listen, we own a bar up the street. We want you guys to come and drink for free all night. And we would say, we'll be there. And, you know, that's when Nancy Reagan was telling all the kids in the United States, just say no to drugs. And we would say, no, just say thanks. And so we were doing that. People would come up and say, hey, you like pot? Here, Sinsamean, Maui Waui, Panama Red, Acapulco Gold. Give us all this great dope. And you like acid, Osley, Purple Haze, Orange Sunshine, Window Pane. Hey. And so my drinking and my using really took off. And the best thing that came out of that relationship with the show Hair is I met a woman there. She got pregnant, and we had a daughter. And so when we came back to L.A., she started working as an office temp worker, supporting the family while I would go around and audition and carry my one-year-old daughter around in diapers on the back of my Harley and visit friends and go to auditions and sit in bar rooms and cheat on her mother. And I mean, I thought I was a good father because I was taking care of my kid during the day, but I was not a good father. I risked her life on the back of that Harley and going around and drinking all day and cheating on her mother. But I was a worse husband. And her mother just said, look, I want you to stay in your daughter's life, but get the hell out of mine. And my drinking and using just took off after that. And so I drank and used, I hurt myself, I embarrassed my daughter, I hurt everybody who ever cared about me, my parents, my siblings, I lost job after job after job, I started hurting myself, I skied off a cliff drunk, broke my shoulder, I'm out of work for 6 weeks, fell off a four-story building, broke my pelvis in two places, snapped the heel bone off my right foot. It took me 6 months before I could finally walk without a crutch or a cane, and my friend Teddy got sober, and she was the inspiration to me to get sober. And here's my wife Carla.
Oh, wow. Hi everybody, my name's Carla and I'm an alcoholic, and thank you, Yvonne, for having us. I just love you, and I love your service and all that you do for Al-Anon and AA. And I have enjoyed the speakers so far and the clips, and so thank you for having us. And I just love this guy. I can't believe my good fortune, you know, to get to grow old and up with him. And I do mean both. If there was a textbook description for alcoholism, you know, I used to think that I was it. You know, I grew up in a violent alcoholic home. My father came from a terrorized, he's an untreated Al-Anon coming from a terrorized alcoholic family. And then my mother was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And my stepfather was, I always mistook him because he was such a violent bullying, retaliatory person. Really, I would have thought that was more on the alcoholic side, but he wasn't an alcoholic. He was an untreated Al-Anon, and this was how he controlled things. And I wouldn't have known that without listening to story after story after story of my Al-Anon friends who grew up in those situations. And yet I find out then, knowing, you know, comparing how I grew up with how Doug grew up, you know, in a family that loved each other and sang together and, you know, oh my God, they're just so sugary sweet. You wouldn't believe it. You know, that like when challenges came up in their home, they come together, you know, like, what is that? Whenever challenges came up in my family, we blew it up, you know? His father painted the family pickup truck the color of his high school, you know, is that family. And I mean, I still get kind of a sugary, sugar headache after we've had dinner or something with them, you know, just very sweet. But he sits right next to me in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why? Because alcohol did exactly for and to him what it did for and to me. And so that just reminds me that alcoholism is no respecter of persons. You know, anybody can be prone to it, no matter what our backgrounds are, education, where we grew up, you know, it's just the way it is. And that it's not my fault that I have it, but it is my responsibility to take the actions that needed now that I know I can take to be able to stay sober. And I don't think we have the market cornered on miracles either. I mean, but I certainly did need this particular miracle. I needed this so that I could get anywhere else. And I always like to say, you know, we've realized over time that when Doug was working Hollywood and Sunset Boulevards in the clubs on Hollywood and Sunset Boulevards, I was working Hollywood and Sunset Boulevards. But had we gotten together at that time, we would have blown each other up. You know, we were young, we were sick, and we never could have had what we have today. And I guess I should say that we've been together now 12 years and will be married 10 years this May, and met each other in Alcoholics Anonymous when we were about 10 years sober. He likes you to know that he was 22 years sober when we got together and I was 21. He's 3 months longer sober than me, but I just tell him that they're man months and they're, so we're really even, but only half the room ever likes that joke. you know, we got together being of service and we had known each other for 10 years or so, like I said, and didn't really have any designs on each other. Until one day we were at a conference in Arizona and started talking, and all of a sudden it just unfolded. And so to roll it back just a little bit, you know, all my relationships before I got to AA were the best I could do, and they were violent. And I mean, I started young. I was locked up for most of my adolescent life, and in every single one of those places, but I would find a sick relationship inside the nut house. There's a plethora, you know, I mean, that's where they keep a lot of the partners. I know some of you can relate to that. And as much of a peace-loving person, and stand up somebody of character that I wanted to be, I couldn't be any of it. And the more I drank, the less I was able to be the kind of person I knew was inside me to be, and sold myself out over and over and over, and even learned that after sobriety, sold myself out enough to where the pain got so great that I would learn from that too. But I had to get sober in order to see any of that. And so I had a baby that I couldn't take care of. I had lost her once. I was getting ready to lose her again. When I got sober, my next door neighbor 12-stepped me and I got to come to AA. And there was a long period, you know, I'm so glad that in AA, you guys taught me that just anybody wasn't a replacement for nobody, that to hold on, to learn what I valued and who I wanted to be in a relationship, not who I wanted in my life. You know, I've heard that make a list of the person you want to come into your life. But what I like to add to that is then become that, because that's how I get to experience it. Unconditional love, and Yvonne brought that up over and over in the clips, and unconditional love is something that I get to experience if I'm loving that way, whether you love me back or not. And that took, I don't always get to experience that, but I love it when I do. I love it when I do. And I remember moments, and it doesn't matter whether it was in AA or even in the workplace sometimes, where I had experienced a forgiveness when I knew I didn't deserve it, or something that would take the wind out of my sails of my own anger or my own resentment or my own retaliation, and having somebody just completely let me off the hook. Whoa, you know, and to learn how to do that, to have an example of something like that and then learn how to do that myself. And so finally, at 21 years sober, I get to know this man. We come together and we find out, you know, I like me and I like him and I love us individually, but there's something about the sum of the parts when you allow yourself to let something unfold and not try too hard to engineer it. And we just have gotten to experience it. And but it didn't feel like that in the beginning. There was so much fear when we got together that I'll talk about that in a minute. But I could not be anywhere near what I'm talking about here without first getting sober. And like Luther talked about, the unconditional love and tough love, the love of somebody being more willing to tell me the truth than to spare my feelings so that I could grow up and learn the rest of it. So thanks for letting me share, and here's Doug back.
I mentioned that I got drunk and fell off a four-story building. Fortunately, it was the four-story parking structure of St. Joseph's Hospital. So they didn't have to come find me somewhere. And my friend Teddy, who was my favorite drinking partner, we had had a romantic relationship, and then it just turned into drinking friends. And but she was with me, and she ran in the hospital and said, my friend just fell off your parking lot and it broke him. And they came and got me, and I had broken my pelvis in two places and snapped the heel bone off my right foot. And I didn't walk away from that one, but I was in the hospital for 10 days before they could perform 8 hours of surgery and make my foot look like a foot again. But what happened was my friend Teddy got sober. I fell off a building and she hit bottom. So that didn't ever seem quite right to me. I noticed that there's somebody came into this meeting today named Teddy, and my heart leapt when I saw that, because Teddy and I had a lot of fun drinking, but she got sober, and she went from this loud-mouthed, crazy, drunk woman into a lady in every sense of the word in about 2 weeks, and everybody who liked her, everybody who loved her was so happy, because otherwise she was going to die, and we didn't want her to die. But I lost my drinking friend, and even worse, every time I talked to her, she would say things like meetings and sponsors and steps and just all. Finally, I said, look, Ted, I don't know if you're trying to draft me into your deal or what, but I'll tell you this, if I ever see alcohol interfering with my life, I probably will go to AA. And her chin hit her chest. She's like, oh my God, Doug. She said, what would you call interference? Brain death? I mean, you've been asked not to come to your daughter's house drunk anymore. How many jobs have you lost? You skied off a cliff drunk. You're out of work for 6 weeks. You fell off a four-story building with a 0.40 blood alcohol level. What would you call interference? Brain death? You're still walking on crutches. And I said, I see where you're going with this, but I don't think that accidents should count. Really, I mean, anybody fall off a four-story building is going to get hurt, drunk or sober. You got alcoholism mixed up with gravity. She said, okay, I'm out of here. She left, and I thought, okay, I won that one. But I watched Teddy, and her life got better and better and better. And she met a handsome TV star, and they got married, and they had a little girl, and they're both living in sobriety, and she went to work in treatment, and her husband got better and better parts, and they raised this little girl. And I just, and about 3 years after Ted got sober, I went to AA, and I went there, I don't know, to see what it was. You know, people that come, hey, you're new, and I go, no, I'm not, beat it. And this one guy said, "You're new." "No, I'm not." "Oh, I haven't seen you here before. What's your name?" "My name's Doug. I never been here, so mystery solved. Take a hike." And he goes, "Well, oh, well, hey, you're, that's new to us." I said, "Look, I didn't come here to stop drinking. I just came here to see what AA is. I'm an observer, all right? I'm a visitor. I'm auditing the class, pal. All right, you know what I mean? I don't want to stop. I like drinking. I drank on the way here, see? So I absolutely intend to drink on the way home. So I don't think I'm your target market. Why don't you go help somebody else?" And he goes, "Ah, man, I like you. You're going to fit right in." I thought, God damn. How could I be any clearer about how I'm not going to fit? But of course he was right. And I started going to AA regularly. In my first 8 months in AA, I did not have a home group. I did not have a sponsor. I didn't read the book. I didn't take the steps. I didn't know what a tradition was. I didn't believe in God, and I was drinking every day. And other than that, I had a pretty good program. My whole program was keep coming back. And I did do that. And at that time in Los Angeles area, there was about 2,000 meetings a week in 1986. And so I went to a lot of meetings, and I went to meetings all over Los Angeles. So nobody would get to know me, but I kind of get an overview of what AA is. And I'm glad I did that. But eventually I had a spiritual experience. I fell on my knees and I asked God for help. I didn't even intend to fall on my knees. I was drunk and I fell on my knees and I spilled whiskey all over my bed, and I grabbed the bottle and there was still whiskey in there, but I spilled it in the bed. So I start sucking this whiskey out of the bed, and a voice in my head says, "Hey man, that ain't right." So I'm like, "What? You thirsty? There's whiskey in the bottle, man." And so I thought, well, I'm not thirsty. I'm frugal. I'll waste my life, but I'm not letting whiskey evaporate in the bedspread overnight. And I looked at what I was doing, and I thought, I've been going to AA for 8 months, and I haven't learned how to not suck whiskey out of a bedspread. And I did a dumb thing. I said, "God, if you're there, please help me." And I sincerely meant that prayer, but I did not think anyone was listening. But over the next couple of weeks, literally 14 days, every single day, somebody from AA would be between me and a drink, behind the counter of a liquor store, pushing a cart in the supermarket, a waitress in a restaurant, every single day. It didn't keep me from drinking either. It just created little hurdles I had to jump over, and I was happy to jump over them. But after a while, you can't ignore them. And I just, one morning I came to believe. I was on the way to work. I just killed a half pint of Bushmills, tossed the bottle out the window. Guy from AA is driving towards me. "Hey, how you doing?" I'm like, "God, where are these people coming from?" And they're like those stupid miracles. And I realized I had asked God for help, and I clearly had gotten the help I asked for. And I came to believe that a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. And I started going to AA and being sober.
Just before I got to AA, you know, I had quit doing any kind of drugs or anything before, about 2 years before I stopped drinking, because I was sure that was what it was. And I had married my drinking partner right about the time we should have split up. And, you know, again, thinking if I put my circumstances together, that would all work. And he and I just ended up becoming the neighborhood entertainment. You know, we used to settle our arguments with a shotgun. It's just, you know, it's just, this is a thumbnail sketch of, you know, my best efforts at a relationship and living and not letting go of the booze, because good Lord, it can't be the booze. If it's the booze, what am I going to do? And until, you know, I mean, it threw me away, and I hung on to its ankle for a couple of years, you know, before. And then I was offered just that flimsy reed, you know, one day, one more time, the cops are in the driveway and I'm getting ready to lose my daughter a second time, and the gun's out, and, you know, the neighborhood's blowing up because, you know, it's us, they're watching us blow up. And And I, my next door neighbor 12 stepped me, and that flimsy reed I hung on to for whatever reason, when that little tiny, tiny window of wormhole of grace opened up, I fell through it this time and started going to meetings and I heard that kindness, you know, that funny chatter that we hear in the meetings when we go, you know, from the sitting in the back room, you know, by the exit sign. Listening to you guys talk to each other and asking about, you know, how's your fourth step going? And do you have a sponsor yet? And, you know, meetings alone don't keep me sober, but they were certainly where I found out about the program and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I still need meetings today. I don't like it when I hear people say that you don't need meetings anymore. If nothing else, they remind me when I get to find the newcomers. A friend of mine says it's where they keep the newcomers, but it reminds me what the stakes are if I don't continue to do this work. And my big book never says stop doing it ever once. And my big book never stops talking about the stakes being that first drink of alcohol for an alcoholic. And that's pretty important. I need to remember that I'll never be so spiritually fit that I can safely take a drink of alcohol. And sometimes I hear people say that's not important anymore. And, you know, sorry. That's why I'm here. And anyway, I was 12-stepped and I got to stay, and a lot of things happened. A lot of life has happened. And so I'm so glad that, again, I'll repeat it, that just you guys taught me just anybody isn't a replacement for nobody. And I would sometimes see things that happen. In fact, one of the very sweetest stories that I have that some people kind of didn't like. This couple became the talk of our home group. You know, it was a couple who were leaving their spouses for each other, and they came to the same meetings. And you know, they were being talked about like it was scandalous, you know, really scandalous. But these two people, this couple now in AA, the only way I've ever known them, took time out of their busy affair to help a newcomer. And so I don't know what was wrong. I don't know if they were leaving people they never should have been with, and they finally found each other, or if they were doing something if they stayed sober, they were going to learn from it. How would I know? But I received the benefit, the side benefit of whatever, the two of them trying to help a newcomer. So do with that what you will. But, you know, I just find the irony and sometimes the messiness of Alcoholics Anonymous fascinating. And I got to stay here. My daughter ended up needing treatment. She was 11 years old and she had a lot of trouble. She was one pissed off kid, and I got to become the kind of a mother I'd always wanted to be, the kind of mother who would stand up and advocate for her. And at the same time had to learn how to tell her no and to help her grow up, to learn how to parent through the hideous guilt that I felt. And rightly so, for the things that I had done. I don't know as a mother that I will ever not regret some of that, but I am able to share it and to tell somebody that there's a way through this. That's what my friend calls the language of the heart, this sharing of our dark past. And at 5 years sober, I was raped by an intruder in my own apartment. He came in the middle of the night, and I won't go into the whole story about it, but what it did was it had me re-ask a lot of questions about myself. I had to let go of a lot of old ideas about myself and about some even hanging vestiges of God where this big, huge entity that sits in the sky and shoots things at us to see how we're going to do with them. You know, that God had to go. And I found out that my loving God is comfort and help and the outstretched hand of the fellowship of not just Alcoholics Anonymous, but that was certainly my first point of contact. And to reopen a channel to a God I've always known has existed, to allow me to wake up. God didn't show up. You woke me up. You gave me a channel to wake up, to see what always has been. And I learned to forgive in that. And I learned how to let go of the old, to begin to let go of my old ideas about myself. And to learn that it was for me to testify in that trial, and it was for me to forgive. And that was possible all at the same time. And he was convicted. And I know that's not always the way that those things turn out. But then in that story, in sobriety, I've been able to tell that story and talk to people of to whom that's happened, that kind of thing has happened, and we walk through it together. You know, as a result of stuff like that, I also had to come to realize, you know, my own fears about myself, and how it was so tempting. And I actually, I acquiesced to the temptation to begin to protect myself, to stop trusting God and think, well, God wasn't looking at that kitchen window that night, so maybe I need to buck up, you know, and clamp down on my life and start to protect myself a little more. So I took that journey too. And I'll tell you, self-reliance failed me in sobriety, just like it did outside of sobriety. So I learned how to have, you know, these crushing dark nights of the soul, and then let go, and then have a new relationship with the Creator. And what I found is that the bumpiness and the messiness of my sobriety is just as mandatory for my spiritual growth. It's not that I'm working a bad program when I don't feel well. It's that it's time to see something in a new way. It's time to maybe use the same tools to discover something new. And so I'm all in for the adventure. You guys taught me when I was brand new to get comfortable with being uncomfortable sometimes, and that has served me well. And in that has been a whole bunch of joy too. So thanks. Whoops.
Yeah, I was never married before I got sober. And I was 42 years old when I got sober. Still I wasn't married till I was 9 years sober. And since then I've been married happily and faithfully for 24 years to three of the finest women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the fact is I was 13 stepped when I was 21 days sober. You're not supposed to do that. But that lady and I were together for 15 years, the first 15 years of my sobriety. I'm 33 years sober now. And so almost half of my first half of my sobriety, Randy and I were together. And then the marriage, at one point we looked at this and said, this is not a marriage we're in. She said, yeah, I think we should terminate it. And we did, and we're still friends. She attended both of my subsequent weddings. And then I was single for a while, and then I met somebody else and was married. And both of those women are fine women. Just the marriage ended. And it's funny, and if you're living a spiritual program, you can have a divorce without having fighting and cheating and stealing and hatred and what was wrong with me to ever, you know, I was like, that was nice. It was good. And then it ended and moved on. And thank God it did, because sometime shortly after my second divorce, I was invited to go and speak at a conference in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I knew my friend Carla was going to be there. And we used to attend couple of meetings a week together, and not together, but it was the same meeting. We sat a couple of seats apart. The Saturday morning meeting, I said, I hear you're going to Scottsdale. And she said, yeah, well, so great, we'll see you there. And when we got there, we were the only people we knew there. So we kind of ended up hanging out through the weekend, and we had a couple of meals together and went to some meetings together. And mm-hmm. At one point we sat by the pool for about an hour, and that was better to each of us than we even realized until we talked about it later. But on the way home in the plane, going back to LA, I thought, you know, I should ask this woman out, or we're going to go back to being casual friends. So I said, hey, you ever see that play, that musical Camelot or Spamalot? And she said, no, it's a musical version of Monty Python's Holy Grail. She said, no, I haven't seen it, but I heard it was good. And I said, I'm going to go see it this week if you'd like to go. She said, oh, what night? I said, whatever night you're free. And she said, I'd love to. And we worked it out, and we went to see that play, and we've been playing ever since. Like she said, We've been together 12 years now, and this coming May, just a couple of months from now, we'll be married 10 years. And it's just second to sobriety and a relationship with the creator of the universe. I gotta say, this relationship with Carla is the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know, my daughter started to introduce her one time at a Christmas Eve function, and she said, "This is my dad, Doug, and this is my Carla." And you know, my family loves her, and she loves them. I love her family. Her daughter is just one of the. I respect her so much. Both of our daughters have raised two sons, and I love her dad. Her dad and I went together the other day to get our COVID vaccines together. And I'm just so blessed. We go to bed almost every night, kiss each other, and say, "I can hardly wait for tomorrow morning so I can be with you again." Oh, that's right, Don. Anyway, we both sponsor people. Carla sponsors over 30 people. I don't do that. I don't think I could do 30. If, you know, I'd get to like, well, if they die, they die. But I'm kidding, of course. But it's just it's a beautiful. Beautiful life. When I get up every morning on my knees and say, "Thank you, Father, for another day. Thank you for all the blessings in my life. Thank you for this woman. Thank you for my family. Thank you for all the people in AA that have come and gone. Let me see your will for me today and give me the power to carry that out. So far, so good."
Think of any better way to put it than you know, the best things in my life have never, I could not have engineered them, you know, and the same with our relationship. I like him and I like me, but together God does something really wonderful, and to be able to enjoy this But there was so much in the way still, you know, when we got together, that I had fears I didn't even believe in having when we got that close to each other and to having this relationship. I didn't get it. I thought I was, my competitiveness came back, my fear, power, you know, what is that? Why is this happening? And so I had a lot of internal work to do, and all I can say is that I was honored to have the opportunity to do it. It took a while for me, you know, in sobriety, to cut loose of the old ideas about me and to venture into new ways of learning how to love, and sponsorship is still my favorite. Loving someone unconditionally and it's always a surprise to me. You know, I can look across the room still and think, well, too bad. I don't think that person and I will ever really cross paths. You know, I like them from a distance, but you know, I can't see a relationship. And the next day they'll call me and ask me to sponsor them or ask me, you know, okay. And maybe the same for me too, you know, so these relationships that I could never engineer happen anyway, if I let them and stay curious instead of fearful. But it took a while, you know, and I'm a big meditator. I really believe in having my own relationship with this power I call God for short, because it allows me then to walk out into the world and to, you know, venture and try things that I never would have. And there was a little time, we don't have a lot of time, but I started ballroom dancing when I was in a particularly rigid and fearful place in my life. And I just said yes to it, you know, and what it did for me was it allowed me to allow somebody into my personal space again without having to control it or and to learn how to relax then again into this moment and to allow some spontaneity and to allow some fun. And it used to just really piss me off when Doug and I got together, because I remember when I was looser and when I was fun and when I had a wicked sense of humor, and something had happened in my sobriety where I clamped down and that began to be hidden. And we would go to conferences and people would say, well, is he always that funny? And finally I turned to somebody, I said, no, no, he's not that damn funny all the time. You know, he's a real boy. And people, and it, I don't know what they thought, but I know I thought, oh, I got a little work to do. And so that was what was next. And so instead of having to throw out any old or new ideas about myself, I just put them on paper. I share them with my sponsor and some close friends and keep going. And I like he said, you know, his wives were all invited to our wedding. I think one just couldn't make it, but you know, we're all acquaintances and friendly friends and stuff. Not that we couldn't be more, but we just don't run in those same circles. And our families love each other. And I don't know, I've learned over time to not be afraid of this person that I love so dearly. And, because the fear is in me, and to care, to when I can relinquish that fear, then I can care more about him. And we're both getting older. And so we're learning also how to venture into this seniorhood together as well. We were riding home last night, and he was riding awfully close to the cars on the right side of that were parked on the right side of the street. And I don't want to be a nag, you know, but we're getting really close to the cars on my side of the street. sometimes it is like kind of like riding with Mr. Magoo, you know. And so when, you know, when do you say something? And so then I didn't have to, because he clipped a mirror on somebody else's car and he said, what was that? And so then I got to tell him. But I think next time it'll be okay to say something a little bit earlier. Anyway, we're learning, you know. But the thing is that my grip, when I can loosen my grip on this relationship and how I think it's supposed to be and let go of the fear, then we just start talking to each other. We make decisions together, and I don't have to be afraid. We lay it out on the table, and I'm not afraid of the answer. Whatever the answer is for the two of us, we go together. And, you know, if you want to call that keeping the AA traditions alive in our life, yes, we are unified because we care about each other, and we make room for that. I am always so delighted to talk about this. He's the first face I want to see in the morning and the last face I want to see before I go to sleep. And it's very apropos quote, because this is all very When Harry Met Sally here. I'm loving this whole conference, and am going to be on as much of it as I possibly can today. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Doug. Let's unmute ourselves and let me see if, hold on. Let's unmute ourselves and hear appreciation.
Thank you.
Thank you.